Let's go to Washington now, where everyone is already wondering whether 2018 could be a wave election. Well, there's another wave that's already hitting Republicans. 29 House Republican members have announced they're out, not running for re-election in 2018. And it's not just backbenchers either. Powerful committee chairmen like Bob Goodlatte of Virginia, who chairs the Judiciary Committee, said on Thursday he's not running again. And of course, you've heard about GOP senators like Jeff Flake of Arizona and Bob Corker of Tennessee. So why are Republicans tapping out? Well, there are a lot of reasons, but this is definitely one. Steve Bannon talking to the New York Times last week.
I believe to win, they have to recreate the coalition that won on November 8th of 2016. The Trump agenda will win.
Joining me now is Cheryl Chumley, online opinion editor at The Washington Times. Cheryl, thanks for being here.
Great to be here, Todd.
You were an early backer of candidate Trump and President Trump. You must love what you're seeing with Republicans heading for the exits.
Well, I do love the fact that Trump is in the White House. I was an early backer. I am still a backer of Trump. I can't say that I love what's going on in the Republican Party right now. I hate to see Republicans publicly fighting and feuding with other Republicans.
But then when you look at Bob Goodlatte of Virginia, who I mentioned, Judiciary Committee chairman, Jeb Hensarling of Texas, a chairman, Lamar Smith of Texas, a chairman, all who announced their retirements recently. You talk about feuding, but this is people saying they just don't want to be involved anymore.
I don't know if I would characterize it that way. You know, this is not uncommon that politicians don't run for re-election. There is a little bit higher bump in this coming election cycle than has been in the past, but you have to look beyond the numbers and realize that half of those people who are retiring or not seeking re-election from the House are doing so because they're seeking state Senate seats or they're going to run for governors of their states. So it's not exactly an anti-Trump thumbprint that we're seeing here, not yet at least.
And you're saying that this is not necessarily the Bannon strategy of pushing out establishment Republicans, right? But there is the case of Jeff Flake in Arizona, who only a few short years ago, as you know, was considered one of his party's most conservative members.
He was. And, you know, a lot of Republicans still like him. A lot of conservatives who don't like the establishment wing of the Republican Party still like Flake. But at the same time, Flake's being a little disingenuous about his political career here. What happened was he went to D.C. and he voted with Donald Trump on Donald Trump-backed policies, something upwards of 90% of the time. And then he came out, though, and criticized Trump. He wrote a book about it in August that just criticized the whole populism style movement that Trump ushered in. So on one hand, he voted with Trump. On the other hand, he publicly condemned Trump. And that's something which conservative voters, Republican voters have had enough of for some time.
Cheryl, there are congressmen like Charlie Dent, a moderate of central Pennsylvania, who's also not running for re-election. He's from a moderate district in a moderate state, a real swing district. I'm from that district. Is it wise, though, for the Republican Party to be pushing out the Charlie Dents of the world? I mean, a Democrat could well win that seat and probably will.
I don't know if you would say that the Republican Party is pushing out these moderates. You know, Steve Bannon has his own views, but he's just one guy. I would look at it more as a voter-driven effort, a voter-driven activism. I think voters for some time in the Republican Party, conservative, patriotic voters, if you look back on 2010 with the whole Tea Party sweep, they've been frustrated by the establishment Republican wing for such a long time, and they see that Trump finally making it to the White House is giving them a voice in the executive that they haven't had for so long. Conservatives now have a clean sweep of the House, the Senate, and the White House, and they really want to get things done. And I just think saying that Steve Bannon is pushing this, I think it's more the voters are pushing this, voters in the Republican Party, and Steve Bannon is coming forward as a leader of that.
So, Cheryl, you see 29 Republicans so far in the House, a couple more in the Senate on the way out, and you say what?
I say that it's too early to credit this to a rejection of Donald Trump.
Cheryl Chumley, online opinion editor at The Washington Times. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
A lot of people are coming up against the reality that they either have to sign on with Trump or they'll be just going down with the ship. So, you know, it's a couple of bad choices that Republicans are faced with.
David Neiwirth has been following right-wing extremism and white supremacist groups in this country for decades. Well, as Cheryl Chumley just said, not all the Republican retirements from Congress can be pinned on Steve Bannon and President Trump. But David Neiwirth still says, take note, the alt-right is becoming more powerful under President Trump. And he says they're intent on pushing out the moderates, even the establishment conservatives, and instead offering chaos.
They're out there feeding people's fears and stoking people's paranoia and bizarro beliefs. And it's really hard for a Republican anymore to try to rein their own constituents in.
David Neiwirth is author of Alt America, The Rise of the Radical Right in the Age of Trump, where he writes about the history of white supremacy and how it mutated and adapted into white nationalism and how the alt-right we talk about today began.
Mostly through the internet. In fact, that is pretty much what the alt-right originally was. It was really this kind of online phenomenon where, yeah, we saw a lot of these very traditional white nationalist, nativist, even neo-Confederate points of view coalescing with some of the newer influences, including, I would say, this very much misogynist culture that has arisen around video gaming. Really, it's predominantly a white male's culture that they believe is under attack. And it's classic right-wing authoritarianism in that they really have a very zero-sum view of this, that, you know, if any other race or any other segment actually makes social gains, and this includes women, then they must be losing, you know, if one side wins and the other side must lose. That's very much their worldview, and it very much informs the sort of fear that they develop. And what they really often do is that they're fomenting fear of these feminists, fear of Latinos, fear of immigrants, fear of anybody that's new or different.
How has all of this kind of interact and interceded with mainstream politicians?
Well, as you know, there's this sort of second universe, and that's really what I call Alt-America, and this alternative universe that they've created for themselves. It's really an epistemological bubble in which Obama did not have a legitimate birth certificate, in which he's secretly Muslim, in which globalist Jews are plotting secretly to enslave the United States. You know, this is part of their worldview. And it's very much an upside-down sort of thing. But Donald Trump very much played into that. And for the people on the alt-right, this is a very heartening development. They listen to Donald Trump. He says all the right things that make them happy. And yet he's astute enough to do it in a way that, you know, allows him plausible deniability about the origins of this stuff and the thought.
So, David, where does all this go, do you think? The internet, of course, isn't going anywhere. Neither are the demographic shifts in America that might have a lot of people in the alt-right universe aggrieved that their way of life is going away. Pluralism as an opposing force isn't going away either. So where does this go?
Well, I don't think there are any easy solutions, and certainly not any top-down solutions. I think ultimately it's going to have to depend on all of us ordinary people making a difference in our personal lives and our personal dealings. I think folks in urban areas need to reassess how they look at people from rural areas, and I think people from rural areas need to have a similar awakening. How we bridge that gap, I don't know. But a lot of these conversations occur over our dinner tables and in our business dealings and in just our everyday relationships. And I think if we can, you know, develop some humility and maybe a different approach to how we talk to each other, I think it's going to make a difference. I mean, really the core thing to me is that Americans need to understand that the far right is, you know, the radical right is profoundly anti-democratic. And it's intent on destroying our democratic institutions. And we need to understand that. These institutions are under assault, and we need to stand up for them. We've kind of taken them for granted. I think we assume that because they've been here for 100 years, chugging along just fine and making life good for most of us, that they will continue. But they are being challenged by a political faction that has every desire to throw them out and replace them with authoritarian rule by a regime led by somebody like Donald Trump.
But on the other hand, are you happy, David Neiwirth, to see several high-profile Republican conservatives saying exactly what you're saying? Jeff Flake, Bob Corker, Mitt Romney, even George W. Bush?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I am glad to see it. I mean, I've been warning that this has been coming on for a long time, so it's heartening to hear other voices joining in. If those voices are standing up and saying something, then I think the rest of us better pay attention.
The book is Alt-America, The Rise of the Radical Right in the Age of Trump. David Neiwirth is the author. Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.